another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.
From the intersection of technology and public accounting,
it's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession. Tech2Go is sponsored by ADP.
Hello, Greg LaFollette for Intersection Live. Today we're recording episode 17 of our grandpappy podcast, Tech2Go, and I have the whole gang here. Welcome to my friend Randy. And Randy, you're calling in from K2 headquarters down in Louisiana, is that right?
Actually, I am in my home office today. I'm actually home for 3 or 4 days.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, that's the problem with that caller ID thing that says East Louisiana.
Well, that's our voice over IP system, so I'm just on the voice over IP phone system, and that happens to be my instrument on our Hammond, Louisiana office.
Right, and that's exactly why sometimes we're not quite as smart as we think we are. We outsmart ourselves. Also on the line from the Pacific Northwest, my friend Brent Goodfellow. And Brent, I'm sure you could tell us a little bit about how that VOIP and caller ID thing works and how we can solve that problem someday, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty transparent. A lot of the newer phone systems are allowing you to specify the caller ID that goes out from wherever you're connecting to the system.
So I could just say I'm calling like from the White House.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that's always fun.
The White House might have a problem with that, however.
Yeah, that's probably true. And also with us is Dave McClure. Good morning, David.
Good morning, sir.
And you're home in the mountains today?
I am at home in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, yes.
Life doesn't get much better than that. Good for you. Well, we've got a real full schedule, and you know, as you remember, you guys were kind enough to record a couple of sessions kind of back-to-back before I took off and went to Brazil for the month of April. So we're going to kind of start with a tax season wrap-up and look back a little bit at some of the things that we've heard and we've observed and we've experienced about what seemed to work and what didn't work. And now that that time is over and practitioners have had a time to take a deep breath, you know, kind of what they're thinking about for next year and stuff. Brent, how did it go for you?
Our tax season went really pretty smooth. Actually, we had one of our partners that had some health problems, and so we were down a partner, I guess, if you want to think of it that way. And we depended upon our systems to make up the difference, which they did famously. So that's a good thing, we're just real pleased with the way in which the technology supported that effort. We were able to kind of get through a busier season without one of our partners. So that was a good thing.
Right, and it kind of sounded to me, and we're going to kind of go around the horn here, but it kind of sounded to me as I sounded out. Firms all around the country that, by and large, everything seemed to work well. We had a couple of glitches here and there. The interesting one I kind of thought was a CCH document on Leap Day. Randy, did you see what happened on that one?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to save documents that day for a lot of people, but it was interesting. It didn't affect everyone in the same way. I was actually interested to know that the CCH folks were able to get a patch out in relatively short order, but frankly surprised that such a bug was in the software initially.
Well, they're surprised that it got there, but also surprised at being, you know, coming out of one of those large places. It is amazing that they move as fast as they do, because seeing how that sausage is made sometime, it's hard for them to do stuff that fast. And they were on top of that within an hour or so.
Yes.
They were already fixing things. That's pretty impressive. Unfortunately, a lot of people suffered with it all day long because they never did figure out that they should be calling or downloading a patch or anything like that. What about the others, Brent? You're also an UltraTax shop. That worked okay?
I'm mute already.
Yeah, we did. We didn't have any problems with UltraTax at all, and there wasn't anything associated with leap year or leap day or whatever. As we don't use that particular CCH product. So.
Okay, I'm getting some background somewhere from somebody, so you might want to check. There's somebody behind you.
Yeah, not from here, unfortunately, but I'd heard it also.
Yeah, I heard it too, but nobody around me.
Well, it must be a ghost in the phone system. The UltraTax did have an early on kind of a pro forma state issue that was pretty localized and handled very, very quickly. And same thing over on in Lacerte Land, a couple of things, but handled amazingly quickly. So I've been pretty impressed with the way that support was handled, kind of all the way around. Now that's over, what about upgrades this year? Randy, you talk to an awful lot of people. Are you telling people now that SP1 Vista is out that it's okay to go, or what are they doing?
Yeah, from that vantage point, I think it is really okay to go. I'm still being a tad more aggressive than maybe I should be because of wanting to run machines with larger memory spaces. We're recommending and deploying a lot of 64-bit Vista with Service Pack 1 on it. Most of the key applications and drivers seem to be fine there. There is still confusion from the vendors about deploying that. But it's pretty clear that both Vista and Office work better in the 64-bit environment with 4 gig of RAM. So that's actually a core recommendation. One thing that I'm getting a little softer on, though, is the Office recommendation. If people have not made the move to Office 2007, there's reason to believe that Office 2009, read Office 14, will be out in the early part of next year, which at that point then says, well, gee, if we haven't converted at this point, maybe we will hold on for just a little bit more and convert the whole firm to Office 2009, just ride it one more year. So some firms are starting to make that decision. And, of course, since Microsoft announced that they were going to get Windows 7 out, at least in their opinion, relatively on time in the 2009 timeframe as well, we've had a lot of corporate America starting to hold back on their Vista deployments, saying we're going to ride Windows XP, waiting for Windows 7.
Sure. Sure. That probably makes some sense. Dave, you've moved to Vista now?
Oh, of course. Yes. Long since. So I tend to agree on both the calls with Vista and with Office. Microsoft is pushing aggressively the new versions, though I haven't seen yet a lot of detail. The details about the new Windows are just coming out, and we haven't heard much about the new Office either. But I'd say at this point, hold off and just pick up the patches for your Office 2003 if you haven't upgraded yet.
Sure. Well, we're going to talk towards the end of our podcast, as we always do. We're going to go back and talk about Server 2008, and I know Brent will have some things to say about that. Have you been getting calls from firms, Brent, about adding new hardware and going to Vista now, or is that boogeyman just gone?
Well, no, this is the traditional time when firms start thinking about, you know, what are we going to do for next year, and there's a lot of thought being given to Vista. There's a lot of thought being given to Office, and on the server side, you know, I think we probably ought to just mention a couple of things. The most recent roadmap, license availability roadmap published by Microsoft, indicates that XP will be available, and this is OEM and retail license availability, through June 30th of this year. So we've got just about another month that those licenses are going to be available for XP. And so firms that really want to stay with XP, they need to get busy and get those licenses right away. The other thing that I think we should mention is there was an interesting announcement from Microsoft on the server side. We're all familiar with Small Business Server.
Right.
But Microsoft recently announced kind of a mid-range Small Business Server, if you will. They're calling it Windows Essential Business Server. Have any of you guys heard about this announcement?
Yeah, I've been following that as well because, Brent, I thought that would actually be, let's call it an intermediate piece for slightly larger firms, and mm-hmm. I thought it was quite applicable to the CPA firm space.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, I think briefly what we need to say about this particular product is, you know, there are two editions, just like there is with Small Business Server. There's a standard edition and a premium edition.
And what's the name of the product, Brent?
Well, Windows Essential Business Server.
Essential Business Server, okay.
Yep. The standard edition comes with three licenses for Windows Server 2008. It comes with two licenses for Microsoft Exchange Server 2007. And the reason for the two licenses is the way that the best practice for deploying Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 is to have one server be like an SMTP gateway, what Microsoft refers to as an Exchange Edge server, and that's why they give you two licenses there. In addition to that, the standard edition comes with System Center Essentials, which is a management product, and a one-year subscription to their antivirus, anti-spam product, which is called Forefront. The premium edition adds a fourth license for Windows Server 2008 and a license for SQL Server 2008 standard edition. The thing that's interesting here is, you know, you can have, you know, now four licenses for the base operating system, two licenses for Exchange and a license for SQL as well as System Center Essentials, and the pricing is pretty interesting as well. The standard edition pricing is just about $5,500, and the premium edition pricing is around $7,200. So just like Small Business Server, Microsoft is offering a number of what would be very expensive licenses for a package price, so to speak.
Right, and kind of tailored for that small firm. So kind of, Brent and Randy, kind of break that down for us a little bit in you know, remembering the proportion of small firms out there is so incredibly high. I mean, if we look at the 10 and smaller firm that covers 90% of the practices, is this a product that they should be looking at seriously?
Well, I'll jump in first, and Randy can tell me what he thinks. You know, my own opinion is that Small Business Server, although it's been a great product even for a small firm, there's this concern that you've got everything running on one box, and so if that machine happens to go down for whatever reason, not only do you lose file and print, you lose Exchange, you lose your database access, on and on and on. And so this gives you the ability, granted at a little higher price, but it gives you the ability to separate those roles. The other thing that we just got an answer from Microsoft, which I thought was interesting, was that this is actually supported and expected to be considered in a virtual type environment. So even though you have these four licenses, let's say with the premium edition, you don't necessarily have to invest in four physical pieces of hardware because you can run the virtualization piece and do it that way.
Okay, well, that's good. That's exactly what I was going to ask about, because I know we're all about virtualization, and this is really going to be hot, and we're going to talk about that a lot just in a couple of weeks at Tech Plus. Randy, does this fit into the virtualization paradigm that you've been talking about so much?
Well, as a matter of fact, Brent's interpretation is exactly where I thought it was coming from, and it's nice to get a bit of a confirmation that way, because part of the issue with the Small Business Server, although delightful product for firms 10 and smaller, And you can virtualize Small Business Server. That's really not so much of an issue. But this ability to have a licensed, supported virtual environment to run, it was clear that Essentials was really targeted at that type of space. And, of course, as the year unfolds and we see more of Microsoft's virtualization strategy with Hyper-V, this is naturally set up to play there. And at this point, I'm really asking firms to, particularly firms of 100 people or less, so notice a little larger than our normal discussion, but firms of 100 and less, I see no reason to have more than two physical machines. And many of us have multiple physical machines running because we're doing Exchange Server and we're doing a SQL Server for practice management and we're doing this, that, and the other. But if I can get everything virtualized, we really don't need any more than two machines. And the only reason...
I think we lost Randy quickly.
We lost Randy.
Yep.
Could happen. I'm sure he will be back. That's the joy of... of VOIP, I guess.
I can finish his thought there. What Randy was talking about was the fact that with two physical pieces of hardware and virtual hard drives, virtual machine images, then you've got redundancy not only in on the hardware, but you've got the ability to quickly bring a virtual image up on a redundant piece of hardware, assuming that the main host has a hardware issue of some kind.
Sure. So those two machines become redundant by the ability to virtualize and slam an image right back if you need it.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So you want?
Thanks.
Should we talk a little? About VOIP, or did you just drop your phone?
Actually, that was one of those interesting, who knows why it went away. But, you know, this whole issue of getting the virtualization done, I think is critical to the firms, and this strategy of two servers being all that's needed with enough horsepower really on one to run a firm of a pretty good size, well, this all lines up with the Microsoft strategies and so forth. So to me, this is absolutely worth our watching. And the final point I was trying to make, I think when we got cut off, was just the firms have chosen the full-scale licensing of Windows servers sometimes to get this separation of functionality and the reliability, and this winds up being, I think, a better approach than the, you know, bigger brothers of the Windows servers products.
Okay, so before we leave this thing, it just occurred to me because I wanted to ask all you guys about this anyway. This about 6-8 months ago now, Microsoft moved the Action Pack to a requirement. There's a requirement for education in order to stay in that Action Pack. And I know both you and Brent were advising people to renew that fairly early so that they could get in without that education. And I've been talking to firms who've told me that trying to find this online stuff, although there's a lot of it, is very difficult, and it's just kind of hard to find their way through. Is this thing going to take a lot of firms out of that very, very attractive Action Pack subscription thing?
Well,
I would hope not, because having taken a number of the different renewal courses because I wanted to see what they were like, and having spoken to a good number of practitioners who have also gone through the renewal process, yes, is it harder than it should be? Probably so. Is it very doable? Yes. Can you find your way around with a little bit of maybe issue at times? Yes. Can you call for support and get directed exactly where you should go? Yes. And I would hope that we can actually assist some of the listeners with some links that say, look, here's the right place to go, and here's some courses that you might want to consider. But I have really found no disgruntlement, no complaints from the practitioners who have taken the effort, gone through, and they said, you know, it actually was okay and worth the effort.
Well, I have actually talked to people who have had difficulty, and we will go in. So, Brent, if you and Randy can send me a couple of those links, and we'll be sure to post those in the show notes, and specifically for those people who are having difficulty. Dave, did you renew? Did you stay in and take the little test or no?
You know, I did not, because it's so carefully shaped to I think to CPAs and to those who are working like my fellows here on the program, who are working more in depth on the technical side of it than I am. I'm really, as you know, more a bleeding edge and policy guy.
Right.
And it really didn't benefit me that well, and I thought it was worthwhile to pass on it.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, let's pop over to our next subject. I've been out. We've had several of the early shows. Randy, you and I got to see each other briefly in that beautiful new Gaylord in D.C. for the Sage Insights. New Jersey's had their show. Florida's is going on later this week. You know, those things are happening, and there's a lot of CPE out there. I know that, Randy, your K2 guys are out all over the country with CPE. And I want to ask each of you what you've seen effective firms do with you know, the kind of the idea of train the trainer. They send a couple of people, one or two people from the firm to conferences and seminars and things, and then come back and try and train the firm. Do you see that working? I mean, Randy, I know that you'd like to see everybody go to CPE, but you know, sometimes that doesn't happen. What's your thought on that?
Well, you know, on this particular case, philosophically, let's step back for a minute. You're absolutely right. I believe in what I call product champions in most firms, even small firms, where we have one or two people who become the go-to person, and we actually invest extra time, be it webinars, be it live, be it vendor conferences, be it go to additional training, just to bring that information back to the firm. And over the last 3 or 4 years, one of the tools that we've recommended regularly for people to use is Camtasia, to actually now run the product the way the firm thinks is their best practice, record that for other people's training and so forth. And the firms that are doing that are having good success with it. The idea, though, that you're directly asking about, going to these conferences and getting information that they can bring back, I think that's probably not working as well as we would like, simply because the takeaways, the physical things that you can bring back, are relatively small. I think the conferences are excellent for big picture, for thinking, for talking to other people, networking, how they're getting the jobs done and so forth. But I don't think it's the hands-on practical, here's how we do in many cases. A few conferences have evolved that way. The big boys of Thompson and CCH and even Intuit here in their last iterations are trying to do more of, here's a business issue, here's how you solve it. I think that's helpful. But still, as an attendee, you can't always take away the how-to and translate that back to the office as well.
True. Brent, what's your firm do on this? Is are you into the train the trainer thing?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, as it relates to tax topics and that kind of thing, there are certain topics that we can't do that. Oregon, for example, has an ethics requirement. I think a lot of states do, and everybody that has a license has to go to that. You know,
you can just say you have.
What's that?
And just say you went to that, right?
Yeah, you have to actually show up, and you know, for me, who does most of my work in the technology area, it was pretty much like a root canal to sit through 4 hours of ethics. But it is a requirement in Oregon, and you know, the other topics, the technology topics. Of course, we go the in-house route because we have capable people in-house that can do that. The tax and accounting topics, typically we send one or two, and they come back and train the rest of the staff.
Sure. There's another a new topic that I want to introduce today, and I actually have a guest that we'll bring in just a minute. Where one of the very, very hot topics in the profession right now is the whole idea of tax document automation, and we're gonna, that's not what we're talking about today, but it's the item I think that comes immediately before that, or as a part of it. It occurs to me that, you know, we started here 7-8 years ago with the idea of digital documents, and we had firms out creating all sorts of digital documents, and then all the practitioners said, gee, we have to have dual monitors. So it took us several years to finally get dual monitors into the firms, because, you know, we, if you think about it, we had dual monitors. They had a screen for their application and a piece of paper for their work papers and their source documents. When we made those source documents digital, all of a sudden we had people toggling back and forth. It was very inefficient, and so we right away said we need dual monitors. Then we discovered that we needed PDF annotation tools, and trying to use Adobe to do that was very difficult. Lots of Adobe training and people trying to figure out how we were going to do that. And, you know, we had some of the guys come out, CCH as their PD flyer product, and there's a TickTie and Calculate Act First product, several others, lots of people out there. Now I think we've kind of gotten the PDF annotation solved, and so we've pretty much eliminated paper files. But what I see, and I know, Randy, you and I have talked about this, what I see then as a result of there being no paper files is that those paper files defined workflow for many, many firms. And all of a sudden, firms look around and say, my gosh, we don't have a file to move around the office, so how are we going to know who's supposed to be doing what? Do you see that happening, Randy?
As a matter of fact, I have been in 5 CPA firms in the last 3 weeks doing direct consulting work, and I've seen it in 3 of the 5 firms in the last few weeks. So it's a very, very common occurrence, and in fact, when we first noticed this problem, that's really what led us to this thinking. There's got to be a product or a solution, and it was really the other way around. There's got to be a solution to this problem, and then we actually wound up discovering a product that does that, the XCM product. We found very few other products that are comparable in the marketplace, and in fact, in presentations in Toronto yesterday, we were having this same discussion, because the CAs and the CGAs in attendance at that conference were wanting to know how to control the workflows in their offices.
Right. Well, this whole idea of workflow is interesting. I'm glad you mentioned XCM. I have Mark Albrecht, who's one of the principals with XCM, on the line. I'm going to see if I can get Mark in. Mark, are you here?
There we are.
Okay.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
All right. Mark, welcome to Tech2Go. And Mark, you are a principal with XCM, but in real life, you're a bean counter, right? You're a CPA in practice for many, many years. Is that correct?
I have. I've been a tax partner for over 30 years, and I was a founding partner of our own firm located south of Boston.
Okay. Well, I asked Mark to come and join us today, not necessarily to talk about XCM, but to talk about this whole issue of workflow and what's there. And I've written about this, and I know all three of you guys, the regular panelists, have also opined on this, is that we really need something, and there's a little bit of workflow all over. It's in payroll, it's in tax, it's in practice management. There's all sorts of solutions. Each one solves 10 or 15 or 20% of the problem, but the problem is you then end up with this patchwork thing. And these guys at XCM kind of sat down and said, let's solve the whole thing, and let's make it an overarching application. So with that kind of background, Mark, talk a little bit about the problem as you see it and how you've gone about solving it and what happens to firms. I mean, you've got a great example with the firm that you're with, because you eat your own dog food, correct?
I do. The way we look at workflow is we look at the past history that at least I've been experiencing for the last 30 years, and that's through the inefficiencies of moving paper around the office. once a paper file, a tax return, for instance, with the source documents leave my office, I lose control over that particular return or that particular task. And as a result, I'm responsible in my CPA firm for over 200 clients, and during the busy season, I have multiple things happening with those 200 clients. And what's dictating that workflow of how the work gets done for those particular clients is the movement of those files throughout the office. And at any point in time, I do not have a good grasp of where actually those tasks are, or those returns are at any given time. And the problem crops up when a client calls up and says, "Hey, Mark, how's my tax return going?" And I have to hang up the telephone, tell them I'll get back to them, and walk around my office and try to figure out who has it, you know, and when it was last touched. And there's where the inefficiencies happen within a CPA firm.
Okay, so that's the problem. Where's the solution?
Well, the solution is the fact that, you know, for the past 5 or 6 years, everybody's been on the chase of the total paperless office. And we've put in document management systems, which are great, and we've put in other systems which kind of lead us to the trough, if you will, of the paperless altar. Where XCM comes into play is, instead of moving paper documents throughout the office, what XCM is an automated workflow solution that actually creates a digital routing sheet. And that digital routing sheet moves from homepage to homepage of the particular users within the office. So now all of a sudden we're moving the responsibility of working on tasks through homepages, through a web application that people come into and can see a to-do list of what they've been assigned to in real time.
Okay, so it's a combination of, help me understand the difference between workflow and practice management, workflow and due date monitoring. They're a little bit the same, but also different, correct?
They are different in a lot of ways. First of all, with workflow, the idea in workflow is the fact that people are actually working in the application all during the day. It's not a separate system whereby you have to remember to go someplace and record something that you've just done. You're working in the workflow application all day. And the workflow application is designed to be an information repository. Everything that has to do with that particular return or task is located within the workflow solution, such as issues and points, questions and answers, jurisdiction filing, extension information, when a task is due, who are the responsible people for that task, shipping instructions, assembly instructions. And then finally, the piece that we just let go about six months ago, and a piece that we're going to be letting go in about 3 weeks from now, is integration within CCH document management system. That's what we deployed about 6 months ago, and with integration within Windows Explorer. So now what you're doing is you're actually attaching hyperlinks to the related documents to that digital routing sheet.
Okay, so I've got, just to make sure that I understand, I have a web interface, because so it's a web-based product, so I have a web interface, and that's going to tell me what I have coming up, give me as an individual an idea. It's going to give me as a manager an idea of what's going on with all of my clients, and as a partner or as a managing partner, it's going to give me an idea of what's going on in the whole firm. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We have a very vibrant search mechanism whereby a partner can go into a very easy search page and say, "Show me what's happening with all my clients." Run the search, and within 3 seconds, it comes out with the results that tell you the name of the client, the type of task, who currently has it, when it was last touched, whether there are any issues or points that need to be addressed, and a complete audit trail that we typically associate with a tracking system. Automatically within the application itself.
So this isn't Buck Rogers. There are hundreds of firms out there using this product as we speak today, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And the project has really been in existence for 4 years. So this is not a new system that was developed within the last 6 months that's in beta format. This is an application that has been in existence for 4 years. Every year we enhance it based on the feedback that we get from clients of what they would like to see in the application, but I think we're on the fifth or sixth version of XEM.
So now there are products that do, and I'm going to, because nobody, that's one of the difficulties with this, is not a rules-based kind of an application. Everybody's idea of workflow is a little bit different. Brent, I know you use a part of your DMS to do kind of routing and stuff. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, they...
You're accomplishing kind of the same thing, correct?
Yeah, the workflow is built into the DMS system. Mm-hmm.
Randy, you see that happening in other firms? Because the Thompson Go File Room product has what we call that a firm flow now. Is that tax flow firm flow?
Yeah, the client flow piece that's in that product is actually one other example where it's built in the document management system. You see it in some competitive products. Interwoven's Worksite would be another example to a lesser degree, but still exists in the iChannel document management system where they've actually got a workflow. And to a much less degree, the workflow inside ActFirst as a document management system example. So notice, again, the integration, and I would call it document-centric nature of several of those products where they've said, okay, this is really how we're going to handle the workflow. Of course, some of the listeners might be saying, well, you know, I like to handle a lot of those types of routings and so forth in my practice management system by setting the statuses there. But those are more clumsy than what Mark's trying to describe for you. And I know it's harder to picture this stuff sometimes when you're just listening to it, but where it becomes just natural and it's like, okay, what's next to what I do? Ping, and it's out of your way. And you're living in that one view of the world of how you're moving items around. And the other general comment you can make about a workflow system done right is it actually can reduce the amount of internal email messages trying to inform people, you know, it's in your basket now or it's your turn to work on it. It just appears on your to-do list as a next item to do, and the priorities can also be set by yourself or set by other people that you're reporting to.
It seems to me at the end of the day, the important part of the idea of workflow is that, as you said, there's workflow inside practice management. There's workflow inside document management. Heck, there's workflow inside tax. I mean, all the products have got a status monitoring thing, and some of them are actually fairly elegant if everything were a tax return, and it's usually not. So there's workflow all over, and I think the unique thing, Mark, that you guys have done is looked at it and said, you know, this deserves to rise to the level of a single overarching solution. It's not practice management, it's not due date management, it's not document management, it's not practice management, it's workflow.
That's absolutely true. If you take a look at our product and you take a look at FirmFlow, our idea of workflow is all-encompassing within a CPA firm. We have different workflows, and it's just not tax returns or it's just not financial statements. We have proposals, we have expense reports, we have tax notices. We have business valuation projects. We have a whole myriad of things that we do within CPA firms, and each one of those have a different workflow. Where we come at it and where firm flow comes at it is the fact that we look at ourselves as a workflow tool that a CPA firm can use for all its processes within the office, just not tax.
When you come out of the chute, your workflow, you're not practice management with workflow bolted on or document management with workflow bolted on. And I'm not sure that makes it the correct answer for everybody, but it is certainly an interesting way to look at it. And Mark, I thank you a lot for coming and spending time. I know you guys are very busy. You've got your people out, and you'll be I'm sure you'll be out at the at Tech Plus, where we will all be in just a couple of weeks. And if our listeners want to look at it, it's a good opportunity to stand and look at the XCM product and at the Thompson product, and you know, at other products that are the Act First product that we mentioned. Give you a good opportunity to look at everybody and kind of see what fits.
Great. Thanks a lot for the opportunity, Greg. I appreciate it.
Mark, thanks very much for joining us. This is Mark Albrecht, a principal with XCM, and we appreciate his time. And that workflow thing is something that I think is going to heat up a lot. I want to quick change subjects here and talk about something that I've been hearing about and seeing more and more. Geeky accountants come up to me at conferences and trade shows with a big smile on their face and a UMPC in their hand. And that's the first time I saw one that's ultra mobile PC. It's a little thing that's twice or three times as big as a BlackBerry and half the size of my little teeny laptop that I so proudly carry around. I haven't broken down to buy one yet, but they're really starting to come into their own. David, you're the bleeding edge geeky guy. Is this a really big change? What's going to happen with this? It's been quiet, but I'm seeing them more and more.
Yeah, and actually, it's not a big change. In fact, back around 2000, I owned a Toshiba Libretto, which was about the size of a large pocketbook, you know, paperback novel.
Right.
Which was a full PC. It was grossly underpowered. But what happened in about 2006 is Intel and Microsoft and VIA, another chip manufacturer, got together and established a standard for this ultra mobile PC. And the standard is a screen size less than 8 inches, but it has to still run a full operating system. It's not a cell phone. And right now, I own a Fujitsu Lightbook, the U810 model, and I'm madly in love with it. Right now, the Lightbook is probably on top of the market, along with Sony VAIO has a small UMPC product as well. But the guys to really watch, and I'll talk about hardware first and then talk about how it's used, the guys to really watch are Asus and Acer.
Okay.
Asus has introduced its EEE machine, which is at about 8-inch, 9-inch screen size, is just outside the UMPC range, but is still a very small sub-notebook. Acer apparently is going to introduce sometime this quarter its competitor to the EEE machine, and both of those are going to be very low cost. The Triple E machine is a sub-$500 notebook with small size and very lightweight.
Right.
Here's where they come into play. If you're an accountant whose laptop is your workhorse, you're doing audits, you're taking it to the client site, you're sitting and working on it all day, the UMPC is not for you. The keyboard is too small. Typically, like the Lifebook, it may use a processor actually built for a mobile phone. So it may not have the computing power. It certainly doesn't have the hard drive that you're going to need. But if your laptop is primarily a communications device, if what you want to do is watch videos and listen to podcasts like our own while you travel, if you want to check your email and browse the web and do a little bit of note-taking, for example, or a little bit of calculation under Excel, or carry your PowerPoint presentation and update it while you're on the road, this is a PC made for you. It's a pound and a half to carry around instead of 6, 7, 8, 12 pounds worth of luggable. So I'm very high on this class of computer. I think accountants will find it extremely useful for the right purpose, and that is communication, not as the workhorse.
Okay, so these things, in terms of power, they run XP and or Vista, right?
That's correct. Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're shipping with solid state drives.
some of them are beginning to ship with solid-state drives now, and those are the ones that are going to have the larger capacity drives. In the past, what they've done is similar to a laptop. They've used a physical drive that's only 20 or 40 gigabytes in size, but you're going to begin to see 100, 200 gigabyte hard drives in these things in the future.
Sure, sure. So I mean, I've seen many of them shipping with EVDO cards built in, and obviously all of the flavors of Wi-Fi, so they're pretty well connected.
Yeah, the only thing you're going to miss is unless you have a docking station and an internal CD drive, it's not going to have that. What it has in its place is the ability to take SD cards and other flash cards, which many laptops still do not have, and they've also got excellent USB 2.0 support. So what I typically do is either just attach it to my network via USB, a direct connection, or via wireless, and use the CD-ROM drive off of my big machine when I need to download things.
Right, right. And frankly, the optical drives are getting to the point where they're used less and less and less as more content comes from the web anyway.
Sure, and the other thing is, and this is the place where Randy and the guys can jump in. Again, these machines are very easy to virtualize. They do have the power to run the operating system off of a USB drive or off of a flash drive, so that you could actually dismount some of the features, or, as I do, carry an 8-gig chip along, and you can fit 8 or 10 movies on the darn thing.
Sure. Okay, well, you're certainly ahead of me. I've not bought one. I mean, I carry my iPod Touch in my small little XPS 12-inch laptop, and that seems to work for me. But I kind of like the UMPC idea. Brent, you use one yet or no, or gonna pass?
No, I actually bought one. I bought a Samsung Q1 Ultra, which is kind of their second generation. And, I think it runs Windows Vista Home Premium, although you could load a different version of Vista on there if you wanted to. My impression is that it is a little underpowered for the Vista operating system. I think that's probably going to get better. It has a QWERTY keyboard built into it, which the earlier Samsungs did not. But the keys are no bigger than keys on, a Trio. And so to really be productive with it, you need to plug some sort of a USB keyboard into it. But the screen size is so much better than, a Pocket PC or an Apple iPhone that you can really be productive with it, as long as you do have that keyboard, if you're doing any kind of significant input.
Right. I mean, I look at my iTouch or my BlackBerry and say, I could run Excel, but why would you want to? Almost impossible.
Yep.
Randy, I haven't seen you sporting one of these. What are your thoughts?
When I can tell you, I have employees in my NMGI company that I have on the Sony product. I think you know Bruce Anderson from our K2 team, who carries one of those, a Fujitsu UMPC, which is a delightful product. The handwriting recognition and the clarity of the screen. And, I was listening to Dave, and he was just nailing it right step after step after step. Dr. Bob and I actually both looked at carrying such a product this year for what we were doing, and particularly with the discomfort and the limited space on airline travel, this last couple of years, it's almost impossible to use a standard size notebook, so the attraction of the small piece made sense. We've frankly and finally, though, concluded that at least for now, we'd just kind of boot working on airplanes and, relax, listen, read, and just do the work on the ground, giving up that. So we said, we're not doing that. We actually, oddly enough, traded from a carrying position because it was Ultra Mobile PC or Mac. So Bob and I are both carrying MacBook Pros this year to really run Macs with virtualization, thinking that that represents a probable trend in the industry as well. But Dave was dead on. If you're a mobile professional for communications, you know, partner level person, I would absolutely consider one of these products. And there's a half a dozen that are really quite well thought out, well done. And I have recommended them to a lot of clients and have them in use with a lot of clients.
Well, it's an interesting thing. We're going to have to kind of keep our eye on that. And if any of our listeners are using UMPCs, please send us a note or call in and let us know. We'd like to hear from you and see exactly what's happening in the profession. If that's something that's going to be that's going to be helpful or not. Before we move to our last topic, I want to be sure to thank our series sponsor, ADP. I just was just out in New Jersey and had a nice dinner with the guys from ADP and over in Hoboken. You know, the best view of Manhattan is in Hoboken, and had a very nice visit. And it's interesting to talk to the ADP folk and ask them, you know, how it feels to be in a business that everybody else thinks is easy, because they've sure gotten an awful lot of competition here in the last 5 or 8 years. And you know what? They're doing just fine. They're still getting what they consider their fair share, and probably more than that. And they just keep trucking along. They've got they got great tools for accountants, and they just they're smart enough to jump out and do some pretty interesting things, I think, for the profession. One of which is sponsoring us here at Tech2Go, which I think is certainly an indication of their leadership position. So again, a big thank you to the guys at ADP. And if you're thinking about what to do with payroll, if you have clients that actually pay people, and I suspect that most of us do, ADP is certainly a solution that should be considered. It's not the only good solution, but it is certainly one of the better ones. And I've certainly been impressed with them. They're great people to work with. So thank you, and hats off to ADP. Thanks for the sponsorship. Our last topic, we talked a little bit at the top, Brent, about Windows Server, and I'll give you just a couple of minutes to talk about specifically about Windows Server 08. We kind of talked about that enterprise thing, or essentials thing, rather. Do you have something you wanted to talk about specifically on Server 08?
Yeah, we can do a little snippet. We've there's a lot in Windows Server 08, and a lot of the improvements are under the hood, so to speak, although the interface is different as well, and you'll notice that. But we talked about some of the performance gains by using what's called SMB 2.0, and that actual situation where Microsoft tested that and had a 45 times faster transfer of some Stitch files for their MapPoint virtual Earth type files.
Sure.
So another kind of along those lines, under the hood, they have taken the basic file system, which is, I think, a lot of our listeners are familiar with what's referred to as NTFS, the file system in the server Windows Server family. And we have all had the opportunity, I think, of running a utility called CheckDisk. CheckDisk typically is used to correct problems with the disk subsystem, and in previous versions of Windows, you know, those problems did crop up and we had to run this utility. In Windows Server 2008, they have introduced what's called self-healing NTFS, and this self-healing process kind of just constantly runs in the background, pretty much eliminating the need to use the check disk utility. So That's, again, one of those under-the-hood type things in Windows Server 2008 that we don't think too much about, but just goes on without us even worrying about it.
That's interesting. I did not know that was out there happening. So that's interesting, and I appreciate it, guys. We're about at the end of our allotted time, and I want to let everybody know that we're actually recording this on the 28th of May, and very soon here in just a couple of weeks we will all be at the AICPA's premier technology conference. Tech Plus, and Randy will be doing the keynote again. A big thanks to Randy for all the work that he does, and he's constantly the highest rated speaker there. And I'm very much looking forward to his technology review. That will be great. Brent, you're doing several courses. We'll all be there. We'll all be busy, but we do have one open slot. We are going to record Tech2Go live. Episode 18 will be recorded live as we did last year at Tech. We will be recording at 2 p.m. Pacific time. We will not be using TalkShoe. We will be recording live in the AICPA media room. We will let you know if you're there at the conference. We'd love to have you come in and sit with us and make faces and throw things at us while we try and cover a lot of topics. I certainly had a great time doing that last year. Randy, you thought that was kind of fun, right?
I enjoy actually being able to watch the attendees who are in the room as well as the rest of the guys who, you know, a lot of our relationships just over the phone here. But having the face-to-face relationship is very helpful, and I actually think it's one of the best sessions we did last year.
Yeah, it was fun. And Brent, I'm looking forward to that. So that's 2 p.m. Pacific time because we're in Las Vegas, 2 p.m. on Tuesday, June 10th. At the Bellagio in Las Vegas. So if you haven't decided to come to Tech yet, there's one more good reason to come. I guess you could just fly to Vegas and see us. Our ticket will be easier to get than some of the other tickets in Vegas, I'm sure. So we've managed to burn up our time for Tech2Go. This has been Tech2Go episode 17. Tech2Go is the Intersection Live series from the CPA Technology Advisor. I'm Greg LaFollette, the executive editor. I've been visiting with Brent Goodfellow in Portland, Dave McClure in Virginia, and Randy Johnson in Kansas. Guys, again, thank you so very much for all you do for us at the CPA Technology Advisor and to the profession as a whole. I appreciate your talent and your expertise and your willingness to help. Have a great day, guys.
Good day.
Thank you. You do the same.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
That wraps up this edition of Tech2Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust. This has been a podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.